Well, a very good morning to you from Latin America. And this is iFaith number 111 from Nehemiah. Recall that Jerusalem has been destroyed in the 6th century BC. The temple's rebuilt later that century, but the walls are still in rubble. Nehemiah comes, and he's not only a governor, but he is a man with a plan, and the walls are built. Ezra rebuilt faith. As we saw, he studied the word, he practiced it, and he taught it. And that was so key that someone not become a teacher who's only read, but one who's actually obeyed. The big issue, which we saw in the previous talk, was intermarriage. The Torah has many rules for the good of the Jews, but intermarriage, not that is buying into the values of the Canaanites through these kinds of alliances, was especially important. In Nehemiah, the main action is crowded into the spring and summer of the year 445 BC. It's a tense time as the little nation of Judah is surrounded by enemies, Samaria to the north, Ammon to the northeast. Of course, there's Arabia to the south. It's virtually encircled, and as one commentator puts it, the war of nerves had begun. More than half of this book is a personal record, punctuated with frank comments, which make it in some ways, the liveliest book of the Old Testament, one of the liveliest pieces of writing, very autobiographical, not just informational. Like Ezra, Nehemiah had to come from Persia with the permission of the Shah, the King of Kings, and that's a long trek. He comes, and over a 12-year period, he governs and probably is going back and forth. This great man deals with a number of issues concerning the temple, intermarriage again, and also violation of the Sabbath. People who are much more eager to buy and sell than they are to draw near to God. What we focus on today is how Nehemiah stayed on track. What was it about him that enabled him to succeed, to govern wisely, to complete the wall, to stay close to God? And there are two keys I will focus on, and they're interrelated. And there's certainly many more things he did that were very important, like planning and getting good advice. Well, the first is prayer. And we see in Nehemiah, if I've counted correctly, 7 prayers. There's a longish one in chapter 1, and also again in near the end of the book in chapter 9. We won't be reading those, but I'll read the short prayers to you, which come in between. The short prayers are usually a verse or so. In chapter 2, the king said to me, "What is it you want?" And then I prayed to the God of heaven, and I answered the king. That was a prayer he made after he realized he wanted to go back to Jerusalem, and he would need help from the Persian king. And yet he didn't want to disturb him or elicit a negative feeling. In chapter 4, he's back now, and there's opposition, just as in the book of Ezra. The enemies of God want to slow down God's people or deflect them from their mission. And he prays, "Hear us, O our God, for we are despised. Turn their insults back on their own heads, for they have thrown insults in the face of the builders." It's not just his honor he's concerned with, or that of the builders. And he does care about the people. It's God's honor. It reminds me of David when he speaking of Goliath, who's insulted the living God. Chapter 5, "Remember me with favor, my God, for all I've done for these people. Remember me with favor, my God, for all I've done for these people." This is a short prayer. Do you ever do short prayers like that in the day? Or are they always longish? 5 minutes at a time, or 1 or 10? Nehemiah has managed the mini prayer. That's really more like the micro prayer. In chapter 6, they're still trying to frighten him. And it says the enemies think that their hands will grow too weak for the work. So they'll just run out of steam. "But I prayed, now strengthen my hands." That's his prayer. "Now strengthen my hands." A few verses later, and he mentions the name of several of his enemies. A false prophetess, her name was Noadiah, and of course, Tobiah and Sanballat, characters known from history. "Remember Tobiah and Sanballat, my God, because of what they have done. Remember also the prophet Noadiah and how she and the rest of the prophets have been trying to intimidate me." And I've seen this in my lifetime. I've seen people doing great works for God, and then others want to either join them to pollute the effort and drag them down, or they want to distract them, or they say nasty things about them. And anyway, those are examples of those micro prayers. It may be a good example of what Paul the Apostle meant when he said, pray continually. Or if you remember Brother Lawrence, and there's a podcast at my site if you're interested in that. He was a cook a few hundred years ago who was very spiritual. And every spare moment in the kitchen, he would be praying, just living, basking in the presence of God. So Nehemiah's prayers, and that prayer 7 is really majestic. You should look at it when you've got more time. Secondly, how did he stay on track? He refused to be dragged down by the critics. He avoided fruitless discussion, because often the critics, you know, they say things, not to your face, but or they want to get with you and have a big conference about something that doesn't need a conference. We just need to obey God. When word came to Sanballat, Tobiah, Geshem the Arab, and the rest of our enemies, how I had rebuilt the wall, and not a gap was left in it, though up to that time I had not set the doors and the gates, Sanballat and Geshem sent me this message: come, let us meet together in one of the villages on the plain of Ono. Now this is getting near the end of Nehemiah's project. The wall's complete, just not the gates. Of course, that's significant, because there are 10 or 12 ways that anyone could just walk in, and that needs to be done. But they are quite close. And these men, all known from history, the real people, they were scheming to harm him. And they say, let's have a conference. Ono, by the way, is midway between Samaria and Jerusalem. But it would have required him to leave his work. And he's not willing to do that. I am carrying on a great project and cannot go down. He sends that reply with the messengers. Why should the work stop while I leave it and go down to you? That's a great response. Sanballat, the governor of Samaria, Geshem the Arab, who was someone assigned to Arabia, the southern flank of Judah, and Tobiah, who was the governor of the Ammonites, had sent 5 messages to Nehemiah, trying to insult him. I mean, even an open letter, they didn't seal properly, so anyone could see their negative feeling. And this is their final attempt. This is their last chance. And so they choose this place between Jerusalem and Samaria, not far from the airport at Tel Aviv, if you've been to Israel. And distractions. What are your distractions? What are mine? Maybe we use the word diversions, because sometimes it's nice to be distracted, but sometimes it diverts us from a purpose. Nehemiah will not connect with these fellows. And they keep bothering him. I mean, even at the very end of Nehemiah, we see that in the temple of the Lord, Tobiah has his own personal room. Instead of using that to store the utensils for the temple or the tithes, things related to the sacrifice, he has his own room. Nehemiah goes and he tosses everything of Tobiah out of the temple. Now, he's a purist. He wants it to be as God intended. We also see, even though he's a very strong leader, he is submissive. After the wall is completed, a very beautiful part of Nehemiah, now, there are 2 choirs, one walking clockwise, one walking anti-clockwise. And these choirs are led by priests, the singers, and they sing, and Nehemiah follows. It's not the civil officials leading. He submits to the religious leaders. And that's a really quite beautiful. And those 2 groups converge. They walk all around the wall, and then they come together. So these are the 2 motifs that dominate Ezra and Nehemiah, the temple and the walls. They come together, and there's great joy. And so we read, so the wall was completed on the 25th of Elul in 52 days. Not bad for a construction project. Nehemiah was a man of action and a man of prayer. I actually considered titling this that, man of action, man of prayer. But I thought it was possibly a better title for us, and even for me, to call it On Track. Because so often we have good intentions, we begin, but we get sidetracked, don't we? Don't we? Nehemiah's life of action and his life of prayer were finally intermeshed. I mean, so you could look at this as a 2-point sermon, prayer and refusing to be distracted. But really, the point is that because he followed God, because he prayed continually, He was not easily deflected. Prayer was the secret of his focus. That's why he stayed on track. How about you and me? If we're not on track, is there a connection? Is there a correlation between that and our prayer? What sidetracks you? What does it take to deflect me from completing on things I've promised, things I've told others I'd do, things I've told God I would do? If I start a book, do I finish the book? Or do I run out of energy after a few chapters? If I start to repair the house, do I just stop for months or do I complete it? How about projects at work? Maybe you're doing a degree at the university. I mean, would other people say, oh yeah, he's focused? Would other people say, she's focused spiritually? Oh, she's a man of prayer or a woman of prayer. He's a man of prayer. And they're connected. And it's the great strength that we see in this brother or sister. And that's the secret to their productivity, to their joy. Really, we're asking, what does the Lord want us to learn from Nehemiah? And I know he wants me to pray more and focus more, and I know they're connected. And I hope you can make similar connections so that this beautiful jewel, this great book of the Bible, will be powerful in your life. Next time in Nehemiah B, the second part, focusing on chapter 8, we'll have a lesson called Reboot. Until then, thank you for listening.